and fisheries could be drastically affected if the legislature's failure to pass a budget causes a government shutdown. And five Haines students are recognized for their creative writing. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Emily Files. Those stories and more up next. Details of what a partial government shutdown in Alaska could mean came out today. The shutdown would happen if the legislature fails to agree on an operating budget by July 1st. Here are some of the most drastic effects of a potential shutdown for the Upperland Canal. All ferry service could be canceled, commercial fisheries management could be drastically reduced, and about 100 Haines residents and 24 Skagway residents could be laid off. As Governor Bill Walker spoke at a press conference this afternoon in Anchorage, state agencies began sending out press releases detailing steps they're taking to prepare for a possible shutdown. That includes Walker's announcement that more than 10,000 layoff notices went out to state employees today. According to the Department of Labor, there are about 100 state employees in Haines and 20 in Skagway. It's not clear how many of those would be affected by a shutdown, but the agencies say only personnel needed to continue essential services would be spared. Public health is one of those services. Public safety also won't be affected. Most state troopers will remain on the job, and the Alaska court system will continue to operate. If a shutdown occurs, it will happen just 2 weeks into the commercial gillnet salmon season in the Northern Lynn Canal. That could affect the fleet, as the Department of Fish and Game would have to reduce its workload. Area biologist Mark Soggy at the Haines Fish and Game Office says fish wheel and weir operations could continue, but there won't be enough staff to collect and process data. That means biologists would have to manage the commercial fleet very conservatively because they wouldn't have fish return data. Perhaps the biggest impact for local residents would be in the Department of Transportation. All state ferries will stop sailing by early July if the legislature fails to reach a budget deal. Ferry spokesman Jeremy Woodrow says the 11 ships in the fleet will head to their home ports as close to July 1st as possible.
We can't play guessing games that there will be a fully funded budget at some point, and so we have to play it safe and have the ships be in interlayup status in July.
Some ferries will stop sailing in the final days of June, while others will tie up a few days later. Woodrow says a skeleton crew will remain with each ship to keep it ready to return to service. Notice of the layup plans will be posted on the Marine Highway website Tuesday, but those scheduled to sail will not hear directly from staffers.
There's thousands of reservation holders. If we were to start contacting each one, by the time we reach them all, there might actually be a budget passed, and we'd have to turn around and then call them all back.
Budget negotiations are continuing among legislators in Anchorage. Stay tuned for Alaska News Nightly at 6:30 tonight for more on this developing story. Juneau will become the third city in Alaska to offer permanent, supportive housing to high-risk, chronically homeless people. Those are the people who have been on the streets the longest and may suffer from addiction or mental health issues. Elizabeth Jenkins has more on the new initiative that got a big boost last week.
The Glory Hole offers 3 meals a day and connects the homeless with services to look for work or find housing. Up to 43 people can sleep in the shelter's beds. You have to pass a breathalyzer with a blood alcohol level of 0.10. Trevor Keller is the outreach coordinator and housing specialist at the shelter. He says he doesn't like telling people they can't stay.
You know, it can be a bummer to kick folks out, especially in the winter, asking them to leave when it's really cold.
Juneau is estimated to have nearly 600 homeless. 40 of those are considered high risk, so the hardest to house. But for some in that population, that's about to change. The Glory Hole just received a grant from the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation to build a Housing First project. Maria Lovashuk, the executive director, says before you can address substance abuse or mental illness,
you need to put the person in housing. So you need to give no strings attached housing in order for the person to stabilize.
The grant includes $3 million in capital funding, as well as $1.2 million for operational costs for the next 3 years. Tlingit-Haida Regional Housing Authority is contributing land located in Lemon Creek, where the project will be built. Lovashuk says there were a lot of obstacles to overcome to get the 32-bed Housing First facility to this point. One of them was her initial aversion to the idea. So Lovashuk visited some of the Housing First models in Seattle.
It really took like seeing how it works to like realize that, you know, when somebody is like in constant crisis and has been on the street for 12 years, like you can't just like expect them to go to rehab. A lot of these folks have gone to rehab like many, many, many times. And they're trying.
Rainforest Recovery Center emergency vehicles patrol downtown Juneau several times a day looking for chronic inebriates. The program has a room where people can sleep off their intoxication. But the service can be costly. In a two-month span, one client racked up over $33,000 in expenses that included trips to the ER. Lovashuk hopes the Housing First building will cut down these costs. The units will be more like apartments. Everyone will have their own.
It will be people's own, like, little home.
The Juneau Housing First Collaborative is looking for additional funding for the $7 million project. But Lovashuk says they would like to start breaking ground this summer. Once built, it will be funded by a combination of grants, donations, and residents paying a small portion for what they'll call home. In Juneau, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins.
Five Haines students were recognized for their writing ability in a statewide contest recently. The annual Creative Writing Contest is put on by the University of Alaska and Alaska Dispatch News. 600 entries were submitted.
Normally, you get courage by doing something or being so confident in yourself that you think that you're going to win everything. Being too confident is very risky. I know from experience.
Incoming seventh grader Brennan Palmieri is reading from his story, Going to Petersburg. It won first place in the writing contest's nonfiction third through sixth grade category. It tells the story of his swim team's trip to Petersburg.
This is going to be the best swimming trip ever, I yelled off the end of the boat into the brisk open air. Not feeling that I've yelled enough, I howled at the moon like a wolf. Then some of my friends joined me. Now we were a pack of wolves howling at the moon like it stole our lunch money.
Brennan's story talks about how overconfidence in an unfamiliar place caused him to mess up on his second day of the swim meet. His confidence went down the drain, and then...
When I woke up the next morning, I had two choices. Be miserable or go out there and redeem myself. I chose the second option.
Brennan butterfly stroked across the pool and won with a Junior Olympics caliber time. Brennan says he was not expecting his story to win the writing contest, but since it did, it makes him look at his writing a little differently.
I think that I have a lot more potential, I guess, than I thought I did, because winning something like this at my age really kind of boosts my confidence in writing and maybe reach out and try new things with writing.
When you write, you're the one who's making up the story, so you can you decide what happens, and I just like being able to do whatever I want with it.
That's Shishao White. She's going into ninth grade, and her story, Saving Amelia, won first place in the writing contest fiction 7th through 9th grade group. It's about a 16-year-old girl and boy.
And they find a time machine in a museum, and the girl is mechanically oriented, like, and so she decides to fix it, and she wants to go back in time and save Amelia Earhart.
Here's the part of the story where the main character, Dylan, discovers the time machine.
I had felt the urge to learn how it was constructed, and even more, did it work, or was it just a fancy-looking dud?
Dylan finds out it works.
Amelia Earhart, I want to save her from crashing in the plane. Are you serious? Jesse's eyes widen in surprise. I've always looked up to her. She loved machines, and so do I. I just feel that the way she died was not right, and I want to make things better. Also, who knows what other great things she might have done if she hadn't died when she did.
Are the friends actually able to save Amelia Earhart?
Well, that's how I was intending to have it happen, but then I realized that'd be kind of boring.
So she added a twist, and at the conclusion of the story, Dylan and Jesse end up getting back into the time machine to try to save Amelia again. Shishao wrote this story in her homeschool writing group. She says her mom had her work through a lot of drafts before submitting it to the contest.
I didn't think I was going to win because, like, I've read it so many times that I didn't think it was very good. So when I won, I was very shocked.
Xi Xiao says she already knew she wanted to be a writer, but having won this, she feels more like she can actually do it. Haynes students Mandolin Gala, Atlin Zanow, and Liliana Benassi received honorable mentions in the writing contest. For KHNS News, I'm Emily Files. Thanks for joining us this evening. You can listen to and read local news stories on our website at khns.org.